Okay, I'll just begin. I met this with the Holy Spirit and loving kindness. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
So I think we'll start with the meditation shortly. Just who doesn't have a meditation object? So who's still struggling to find how to meditate? Does everybody have a meditation object? Looks like it. Okay, good. So just begin with Waisak. So this is the full moon, is the Waisak. So this is the big Buddhist celebration. So celebrating the Buddha's enlightenment. So the Buddha only became the Buddha when he became enlightened. Before that, he was the Buddha to be. So he wasn't yet a Buddha. So if you were driven down to a little town down south, then you would have heard the talk that I gave there. But I don't remember seeing any of you there, so you missed out. So I gave an hour talk yesterday down when I did the WASAC down near Margaret River. So anyway, there's the one thing that all forms of Buddhism all have the same Buddha. So even though we may have different outward practices and have different traditions of our teachers that we follow, that we all have Siddhartha Gautama, who became enlightened about 2,500 years ago. So in Buddhism, says there's been seven Buddhas in the last 92 universe cycles on this planet. And so it's a pretty rare thing. And so what's unique about a Buddha is that they wake up to all of the elements of how the mind works or how the universe works. But then they only teach those things that help people. So just like in science, we understand gravity even if we haven't studied it. You know, you throw it up in the air and it comes back down. And so what's useful is the science of the mind is what a Buddha wakes up to. So the cause and effect of karma, but also going beyond suffering. So that's called the Four Noble Truths. And when that teaching arises in the world, that's unique to Buddhism. And so that's what a Buddha teaches. But a Buddha doesn't just teach people to become enlightened, because not everybody is interested in becoming enlightened. So some people just want to be more generous, or they want to know how to be good parents, or they want to know how to not lose all their money, or whatever it is. Wherever a person's at, when that person came to the Buddha, he was able to help them. And so that's where we get the word Dhamma from. Dhamma is like teaching or doctrine. And the Buddha said, well, just as he picked up some leaves from the floor of the forest and asked the monks, it's like, well, which is more, the leaves in my hand or the leaves in the forest? And the monks are like, well, of course, you know, the leaves in the forest are incalculably more than the leaves in your hand. And the Buddha's like, well, you know, such is what I've penetrated, like all the leaves in the forest, all the various elements of the universe that I've understood, the workings of things, yet I only teach you, you know, these few leaves in my hand, because these are the only things that are beneficial for you. And so that's when we're talking about Dhamma, we're talking about things that are beneficial for us, not things that, you know, we want to hear, but things that are actually beneficial for us. And so I think sometimes in the West we have this idea that metta means that, you know, it's like you're always pleasing people. But an enlightened being can actually be quite fierce. But it's just like a parent, you know, sometimes they might be fierce towards their children, but they can have a heart of love. You know, they just don't want that child to burn themselves with the fire. But there's another parent who might have anger in their heart. But basically, an enlightened being is incapable of having greed, hatred, and delusion in their heart. So they've gone beyond these things. And so just to give you, because it's WASAC, give you an understanding of the Buddha. So when we meditate, when we are learning these teachings, we just learn them to our capacity. And so having a meditation practice is useful, because meditation is a formal mindfulness training. We all hear mindfulness. Well, in Buddhism, mindfulness is the four foundations of mindfulness. So we have mindfulness of the body, so like the breath, or even contemplating the elements, that the body is not a self, but it's just made up of earth, water, fire, and wind, things coming together and falling apart. And so there's awareness of body, awareness of feeling, awareness of mind state, and awareness of Dhamma. So when our mind is within any of these four ranges, usually the first one, like awareness of body posture, awareness of the breath, it's called mindfulness of the body. This is our usual training. But as we practice over the years, inevitably, you know, you're going to have a painful feeling that arises, or you're going to have an unwholesome mental state, or you're going to be contemplating some teaching. So all of these things are actually considered mindfulness. But when we sit down to meditate, it's a time to develop our formal meditation practice. And then we might have some protections as well. So like if you really don't want to meditate, then maybe contemplate death. Like if you died tonight and you spent your whole meditation thinking about you know, what you're going to eat when you get home instead of meditating, maybe it wasn't a very good use of time. And so thinking of death is a way of sobering ourselves up, because you can't think of death without getting some mindfulness. And so the classic one that I learned is, we will all die on the in-breath, that's for sure, on the out-breath. We will all die, that's for sure. And, you know, it sounds difficult to think of these things, but actually the point is you're giving yourself a coarse meditation object and you're developing peace at the same time, and so your mind will be able to sustain that. But usually, once we've meditated for a while, we can sustain our meditation object. But yeah, so basically there's a thing called the protection. So through the day when we're looking at our mind, if we're angry, then we bring up metta. You know, share metta, loving kindness with that person and other people. Because at the end of the day, if we died and we just spend all that time hating that person, what was the good of that? We can't control that person. We can't even control our own mind. And so, you know, anger is not good. And with greed, we have like renunciation, learning to be restrained. And delusion is that we encourage ourselves to do our meditation, to seek out quiet places, to seek out spiritual teachings, to investigate things. Because our delusion is that we don't want to do these things. We just want to seek pleasure through the senses. But when we die, you know, what good have those pleasures done us? So it means not that we don't enjoy those things, but we see that they're limited. But if we develop generosity, if we develop kindness, if we develop peace, you know, these things have lasting effect on our mind. And basically our meditation is our way of making sure that we're at least developing some mindfulness every day. And then there's different ways to develop mindfulness through the day, like when you make a cup of tea or when you're starting the car. Or one thing I used to do is try and stop every hour for a minute and just be with, like I had the mantra Buddha, or just be with your breath. And then even if you're working 10-hour a day, then you've had 10 minutes of your day of being mindful. And that actually has a big effect on your mind. And then so when you go to sit down and meditate, you haven't just allowed your mind to be crazy for a whole day. And so these are the kind of things we're working at on top of our meditation, how we can develop mindfulness through the day. Because what is mindfulness? It's just stopping our mind from proliferating, being present. And then because we're present and we're not proliferating, occasionally then we can actually contemplate, you know, well, what is good action? What is bad action? What goals and values am I going to live in my life? And we can use directive thought in a powerful way. But if you're thinking about, you know, what job you're going to have as you're driving to work, or, you know, changing your life, you know, as you're changing the diapers of your baby or whatever it is, may not be a very good way to use your mind. So the mindfulness means that you're mindful of the content of your mind and cutting out proliferation. So anyway, we all have a meditation object, so let's start the meditation. So just start by getting yourselves in a comfortable position. Have the back relatively upright, just so it's comfortable. Sense of uprightness helps us stay alert, depending on our ability. Upright but comfortable. And just come into the present. You might like starting by taking a few deep breaths. Just letting go of any difficulties, any thoughts. Leaving everything behind, work and household things and family. Leave all of that behind. Just come into the present. I'm aware of our bodies just as they are. Just bring this kind awareness, kind attention, and scan through the body. Just becoming aware of any tight places. Just relaxing. Might find tension in the shoulders or the face, in the back and the knees. Just scan through the body and become aware of it as it is in the present. Nowhere to go, nothing to do. Content to be here right now. Just this much. If you like, relax the toes and the feet, ankles and the lower legs, knees and the thighs, the hips and the waist. Relax the abdomen. Might become aware of the rise and fall of the abdomen, the belly region. Rising with an in-breath, falling with an out-breath. Relax the chest and heart and lungs. Just become aware of the lungs filling up with the in-wind, emptying of the outwind, allowing the breath to be comfortable. Relax the lower back and sides, the middle back and sides, the upper back, shoulder blades and shoulders. Shoulders might droop a little. Lots of tension held in the shoulders, just letting it unwind. The upper arms relaxed, elbows, lower arms, wrists, hands, fingers and thumbs relaxed. Neck and throat, the chin, the jaw, the lips, the teeth, the gums, the tongue. You might notice a soft smile, very subtle, the corners of the mouth or the eyes, just a smile of relaxation, letting go. Relax the upper cheeks and cheekbones, the nostrils, the nose, bags under the eyes, the eyebrows, the temples, the eyelids, the eyes themselves. The whole of the eyes, the organ of the eyes, the optical nerves, everything about the eyes totally relaxed. So much agitation can be felt in the eyes. Have our physical eyes and our spiritual eyes. Just relax the eyes. And become aware of the forehead. If there's any lingering anxiety, just let it all go. Relax the scalp, the ears, the whole head, the whole body. Body relaxed, the eyes relaxed. Now we bring our attention to our mind, to our mental state. Just bring kindness. Bring up a sense of ease and luminosity. We're both relaxed, the sense of inner wakefulness. And see the tendency of the mind to flow out into the world. Flows out into sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, and thought. It's all coloured by our mental state, reacting, liking, and disliking. In meditation, we let go of all of this. Try and have a positive mental state and a good attitude. Now's the time, if we have a meditation object, to bring it up. I'll give a guided meditation with the breath for those who wish. Everybody else, just allow my voice to be background noise. Just do our best with our theme of meditation. With the breath, I might be aware of the tip of the nose, the upper lip, and the heart, or the rise and fall of the belly. Some people prefer a mantra like Buddha, peaceful, or joyful. We just have our chosen theme, and we stick with it for the meditation. Whenever our mind goes off, just have a good attitude. We were expecting that our mind would go off. We joyfully let go, come back to our theme of meditation. It's just not a problem. Aware of an in-breath coming in, aware of an out-breath going out. And some luminosity and ease. Inner brightness and relaxation. Just allow the in-breath to be comfortable and the out-breath to be comfortable. Sensations, the feeling, the temperature. Trying to tune in to the breath in a way that interests the mind. Fewness of desires, fewness of wishes, content with just this much. See if we can increase our awareness. Be aware of the whole of the in-breath, the whole of the out-breath. And calm down the breath. As we calm the breath, our whole experience becomes more calm. Start to become free from agitation and free from restlessness. Just enjoying the calm in breath, the calm out breath. As our experience calms down, just see that this calm breath is a sense of enjoyment. Peace is enjoying. We can enjoy the in-breath, enjoy the out-breath. Just enjoying the peace, however it is. Sustaining our theme of meditation. see if we can have a sense of unshakable peace with the in-breath, unshakable peace with the out-breath. Luminous and uncovered heart, centering in unshakable peace. See how the mind is after half an hour of meditation. See how the mind has settled down. We can see the cause. Even sometimes when we think the mind may have been like a monkey, still has settled down. Other times we may experience deep peace. We just end by sharing some metta with ourselves, with all beings everywhere, above, below, and all around, near and far, lofty and low, seen and unseen, boundless heart of benevolence to all beings, including ourselves. May we take this peace and metta with us into our lives. And in our own time, when we're ready, may open our eyes. End the meditation. Okay, we still have a bit of time. So we have a thing in Buddhism called the Four Roads to Power, or the Four Roads to Success. And chanda, which is like strong, wholesome desire. So whenever we want to do something, this idea that you don't have desire, well, that's like an arahant. Actually, to do anything, we need strong desire, but it's got to be wholesome. This is the idea. Probably zeal may be a close word. The idea of when we want to do something, if we don't have a desire, nobody would have come here this evening. So, you know, we need desire. and then the next one's wirya. And wirya is energy. And so we need to know how to harmonize our energy. And so the more we practice, it's like, that's why in Buddhism we recommend trying to wake up earlier or go to bed a little bit later, because they're really good times to meditate. You know, usually people are asleep at that time, so it's a good time to practice early in the morning or late in the evening. But to get our energy right, you know, we need to know how to eat the right amount, and we need to know how much energy we have. So, you know, when we're, sometimes we need to slow down. And many years ago I learned a thing on energy, and it's like you have a digestion that's neither too cool nor too warm. It's even and good for striving. So actually energy has everything to do with our body. It's not just a mental thing. And that's why sometimes when we're in a rush and we're tired, you know, those two things don't go well together. So it means that we learn to harmonize our energy for the task. And you know, sometimes we might be sick, or sometimes we might be tired, or sometimes we might have too much energy. And then so getting the energy right means we can harmonize, have our good, wholesome effort, and then have our energy correct. And then you have citta, which is basically just means mind. But in this case, it means purity of mind. So when we meditate, we're trying to make the mind bright and clear. So mind means like the ability to sustain the mind, concentration, like a bright light. So the mind is clear and strong. And so then, by those things, you have the desire to do what it is you're planning to do. You have the correct energy, And you have purity of mind, strength of mind, so concentration, stillness, focus. It's this ability to sustain the mind on one thing in a balanced way. And then the last one's vimamsa, which is where basically we investigate that we're doing things the right way. So just because we did something yesterday doesn't mean it's going to work today. But we're just applying that to see. So it's basically the variables. So we're using a little bit of wisdom to see that the path that we're going down is the correct one, our means of application. And this can be applied to anything. And the Buddha even said an enlightened being who applies these four roads of power, they can live out a century, or live to 100. So you can actually even use these things if you don't have any really bad karma. That means you might end, life might end early for some reason you can't prevent. That somebody who is enlightened, who sustains these principles, can choose to live for the benefit of other beings by sustaining these things. On a lesser degree, anything that we're doing in life, we could sustain these things to be able to know, to achieve that end. And so we use these things in our meditation. So obviously if we're tired and we meditate, then maybe we need to find the right time of day where we're not tired to meditate. And if we don't have strength of mind, then we need to find out why our mind is agitated or lazy or doubting or whatever it is, so our mind can be clear and bright. So we use, without that strength of mind, how can we have clarity? And without the appropriate energy, how can we have a sense of inner harmony? So, you know, we could even have very little sleep, and we can still balance our energy. Because at a certain point, when we balance things, you actually get energy from the mind. And the mind is forerunner of all things. And there's even, I've lent a biography to Tola, and the monk I follow in Thailand. At one point, for 3 months, he only slept 2 hours a night. That was the extent of his meditation. So this, obviously, you know, that's... but the idea is that, you know, wherever our meditation is, whatever we're doing in life, if we can incorporate meditation into our daily practice, it's going to bear fruit. Like if we can just meditate a little bit each day and develop mindfulness, then we're not going to be, you know, we're not going to get caught into the same traps that usually causes problems. But where does that suffering arise? It arises in our own minds. And who can look after that? Only we can. And so it's like, you know, you can't get anybody else to eat for you, just as you can't get anybody to meditate for you. And nobody else can look after your actions. And, you know, so it's interesting in Buddhism that we, like, even if there's great adversities occurring in the world, even if you see very frightful things in other people, you shouldn't be upset by that. You know, you just go, well, what about my own actions? You know, what about that thing I'm doing? What about that? So we just keep turning back on ourselves, because it's easy to point the finger. It's very hard to look in the mirror. And so the purpose of the meditation to begin with is to learn to overcome a thing called the five hindrances, which is like the ill will, sense desire, sloth and torpor, which is like dullness and drowsiness, the doubting and the restlessness and worry. And so basically, whenever we can't meditate, whenever our mind is not clear, one of these five hindrances are arising. So all the mindfulness and everything we're doing, it's just learning to begin with to suppress these five things. And so when we're restless, when we're desiring some sense pleasure, some sense gratification, when we're angry at somebody, when we're doubting, oh, is this the right meditation object? Am I doing it right? No, this can't be right. You know, when we're falling asleep, when we're meant to be meditating, these are all just hindrances. And everybody experiences them. Even the Buddha, before he became the Buddha, experienced them. So the idea is this is why we meditate. This is why we're mindful. It's to learn to see these things. So we can just say, well, this is just restlessness. You know, it's my mind is just restless. Or my mind is just angry. Or my mind is just greedy. Or whatever it is. And we can start to separate ourselves from that. And then the more we see how our mind flows out into the world, then we can learn ways of overcoming that. You know, once I did 3 months of metta meditation, and once I did two range retreats where I did elements kind of meditations, where you learn to start to see things as elements. Because this body was just a pile of clay here, and you came and shouted at it, you know, wouldn't that be stupid? Yet we take these elements into our body. Every day we're changing. Every day we eat. Every day we breathe. And yet somebody comes and shouts at us and we get upset. And so the idea of the meditations and the contemplation is start to separate us from our delusion. Because when we die, we can't take this body with us. Yet most of our trouble comes from our attachment. But if we don't meditate, if we don't have mindfulness, if we don't have peace in our mind, then we never want to think about these things. And so my teacher's teacher is Ajahn Chah. And, you know, he was one who was liberated through wisdom. So he teaches us, you know, whether you know a lot of Buddhism or a little bit of Buddhism, look at your own mind. You know, that's why we meditate. And some people can only get a little bit of peace. Some people can get a lot of peace. But then we use that peace to solve our own problems. Because if we can solve our own problems, then we can have peace, you know, in our lives. Because there's always going to be doomsday, you know, the world's always going to be ending. There's always going to be somebody to be angry at. There's always going to be these things. But when are we going to take responsibility for our own minds, for our own lives? And that's why you know, things like death contemplation and these other things, the more we meditate, they're useful because they might be difficult to begin with, but eventually they lead to peace because they're teaching our mind the true reality that any day we may die, any moment we may die. And even though it's a difficult thing to think about, you know, we have old age, sickness and death, and when we're not prepared for that, then we have pain, lamentation, grief and despair. And these are the things that are really suffering when we're not prepared for change, when we're not prepared for death, when we're not prepared for sickness. And so, you know, we have intoxication with health when we're young and intoxication with life. And but through our meditation, we can start to use the peace and the happiness and the joy that we get from our meditation to contemplate these things without our minds becoming sad. And then one day, you know, when our house does burn down, or we get gravely ill, or a family member dies, you know, we were ready for that because we understand that this, having understood one thing properly, we can understand all things like that. And obviously these things aren't easy, but just like my favorite simile with the domino. You start with one domino and it knocks over another domino that's larger and another domino. And after about 30 dominoes, you can knock over the moon. And it just started from a domino that's like 2 inches big. So the idea is what we need to do is just align the causes. And then when we're going the wrong way and we're causing lots of suffering for ourselves, then we just put on the brakes and we go, well, this doesn't seem very good. This is the wrong way. And so it's just like a jug will fill by drop. If we realize the good actions that are in our lives, then we can try and gather towards that. You know, we go, well, you know, those moments that I meditated, those moments that I was generous, those moments that I was kind, those moments I went to a quiet forest, you know, in the morning, you know, go on a walk on my own and had some peace. All those little things that accumulate. If we start to treasure those things, then our minds will move towards that. And so this is the idea that we, you know, whether it takes one life or 10,000 lives, the idea is we just have the aspiration to move in the right direction and to not give up. And if we don't meditate for a, if we meditate for a year and then for a whole nother year we screw up and everything falls apart, then we just learn from that. We go, well, this was the worst year that I've had in recent history, so now learn from it. and then we can actually grow. And I've had a friend who that happened to, that's why I mentioned it. And so that's the idea of gathering towards the good. Because if we don't gather towards the good, then we gather towards the bad by default. So anyway, that's the Dhamma talk and the meditation. So thank you all for coming. We'll finish with a chant on the reverse side, for those who wish. Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nirvana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble Lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled. A little blessing. So this is in Pali, which is a close dialect to what the Buddha spoke 2,500 years ago. Yata varivaha pura pare parenti sagarang evang eva ito dinang petanang upakapati chitang patitang tunghang kipameva samijatu sepe parentu sangapa chandu panaraso yata manijo diraso yata sabitiyo vivajantu sabaroko vinasatu mate pavantvantarayo sukhitika yuko pavahapivadanna sili sanichang utapachayino chataro dhamma vatanti ayuvano sukham pala. Thank you all for coming. May you have a lovely week. And take the peace with you.